Hello, everybody, and welcome to another installment of Super Podcast. I am your host, Super Marcy, and with me, as always, is the one, the only, the absolutely terrible Australian, Bede. Hello, Bede.
Hello, Marcy. How are you?
Not too bad, Bede. And how are you?
Oh, not too bad, thanks. You know, I've just been pretty busy as of late with certain things in my life, like in terms of applying for a film course and also auditioning for a TV show.
Stalking Armie Hammer.
Indeed. And for some bizarre reason, some mysterious person put a picture of it up on my Facebook page.
It wasn't me.
Right. But anyway. And also writing some pretty cool articles, especially of a new one I recently wrote, which I'll talk about a little bit later. And also reviewing movies as well. So
excellent.
So I've been pretty busy, Marcy.
Yes. I've been a little bit busy, but I've also been unwell, as everyone knows, because I'm the person that's never actually well. So yeah, there's been there's just been a little decline on the website because I haven't actually been well enough to do any reviews, but I'm hoping by the weekend or early next week to actually start getting back into it again, as long as nothing else goes wrong, knock on wood. Knock on lots of wood.
I hope you at least feel a little bit better by then.
Yeah, we're hoping to do some interviews on the site next month, and all my full interviews with the Sushi Girl people will be going up next month. So June is looking to be a pretty cool month. We're working on some articles, and speaking of working on articles, we have one of our lovely site contributors and one of our really good friends joining us for this podcast. So I will welcome, well, another one and only, Miss B. Harper.
Meow.
Ooh.
Oh, hi, B.
Oh, hi, B.
Yes, we'll try not to get confused between B and Bede.
You could call me Miss Harper.
Miss Harper.
Or you could just call me Terrible.
We'll just call you Terrible, Terrible, Terrible.
Terrible.
He really is. Yes.
You're terrible, Muriel.
I called him Beedial once as a take on Muriel, but I don't think it works.
Just terrible Bede will be probably
the terrible one.
The terrible one.
Yes, he is a terrible one. He's very terrible.
I will be the terrible one very shortly when we get to my little quick segment on why I'm a terrible Australian.
Yes, we'll get to that very shortly. But yes, we are welcoming Bede back on the podcast. She was, of course, on her debut episode where we talked about Near Dark and Fright Night, and since then B has done some great reviews, and we are working on some cool articles. Hopefully we can get up in the next few weeks. I'm really excited about them, so everyone make sure you go look at them. And if you haven't already, check out B's list of her top Disney villains. It's a very cool and different list.
Indeed, it's pretty awesome.
Well, yeah. I don't think you actually need any sort of major motivation to go to the site. I mean, it's Super Marcy's website. What else do you need to know?
Yes, and you are all my minions, and I love you all very much.
And we love you too.
Well, thank you.
Yes, mistress.
Yes.
I might be that, what is it, Redfield from the 1931 Dracula. Yes. Yes.
Okay, that's a bit creepy.
I might put a face of the whole idea, picture idea for after the podcast.
Oh God, no. anyway,
you're terrible.
let's really find out why he is terrible for this podcast. Bede, why are you terrible Australian for this podcast episode?
It's funny that before we started recording, he's kind of hinted my possible pick or what my terrible pick, what my terrible film is. So I'll clarify what it is. I'm a terrible Australian because I have seen The Master of Disguise. It was 80 minutes of my life that I will never get back.
I'm still vomiting.
That movie was an abomination.
I'm shaking my head. I just...
I'm not going to lie, Marcy. I saw that movie a few months ago, and without a doubt, it is the worst comedy I've seen in the past century.
It's really an awful, awful, awful thing.
Indeed.
I don't even think I watched the whole thing. So. Sorry.
Don't see the rest of it. I would recommend.
I think I was like watching it in bits and pieces because I was like running to the toilet to vomit because it was so bad.
I think I passed out a few times while watching this movie because of how bad.
Yeah. Maybe everyone should like vote for that movie for one of your tweet-a-thons.
Oh, don't make Beats it through that again. Oh, that's cruel and human torment.
I do think exactly. I don't know why not as many people voted as I wanted to, but I had a high reach, so it's a bit weird. But Bede's next tweet-a-thon movie is going to be Spice World.
Yes!
And I'm ashamed to admit that that's actually a guilty pleasure.
Who doesn't love Spice World?
I'm not going to lie. So I saw that movie in the cinema.
You saw that in the cinema?
Yeah, because my cousin, a different cousin, I might have, wanted to go see it, so she asked me to go see
it. Well, it's not like I can talk, because I did go see the Power Rangers movie at the cinema.
I wanted to go see the Power Rangers movie at the cinema. That's how... To be fair, I was a huge Power Rangers fan when I was about 11 or 12.
Well, so was I. I think I was like 10 or whatever, and I was like huge into Power Rangers. And I said to my dad, you got to go take me to see the Power Rangers movie. We went and saw that, and then I had to beg him to go take me to see Waterworld, and he didn't want to take me because it was M-rated, and I was only, like, 10 at the time, but I won the argument, so he took me to see that, and as a 10-year-old, I loved it. As an adult, not so much.
I might have to...
So let's move on to movies that we've seen recently. I'll go first because I feel like it. I haven't had much of a chance to see many films lately, so I have to go back a few weeks to talk about some stuff that I've seen. And I've just picked films that I watched for the first time. So the first one that I'll talk about, I decided to watch Vantage Point from 2008. And I won't lie, the main reason I actually wanted to watch it was because my other boyfriend, Eduardo Noriega, is in it. And as well as Edgar Ramirez, who is also very fine. Yes.
Marcy, I thought you'd be all about Dennis Quaid.
Oh, yeah, Dennis Quaid, baby. and Forrest Whitaker. Hello, Forrest Whitaker. Yeah, I just decided to watch it for eye candy, but I didn't mind it. It was an interesting concept, and I actually didn't really guess where it was heading. But yes, I did have a good draw over those very good-looking men. But yeah, also didn't mind the movie either. Yeah, it's kind of one of those, like, Sunday afternoon movies. It's not the greatest thing, it's not the worst thing, and it's got like a really good cast. There's heaps of people in it, as you mentioned, like Dennis Quaid, Forrest Whitaker, Matthew Fox is in it, Sigourney Weaver's in it, And I think, like, even Zoe Saldana shows up at some point in the beginning. So there's all sorts of, like, recognizable faces. I was going to say something. Richard. William Hurt plays the president. And he should go down as an epic president, because he is. I like epic presidents in movies. But yeah, it wasn't too bad. Have either of you seen the movie?
I have.
Did you like it?
Yeah, I didn't mind it. Like, it's not a great movie by any means, but it is a reasonably entertaining 90-minute time waster, if that makes
sense. Yeah, it's just one of those things that you can just sit and watch and not really care too much about. Yeah.
Although I did have to laugh, it just got more ridiculous as it went on.
Yeah, as it kind of, as the twists and turns coming into it, you're like, oh, okay then. It's like that kind of thing. Do you see that movie?
It was a very long time ago when I saw it, but yeah, I agree with B. It's a decent time waster. Nothing more, nothing less.
And a good perv if you like those really good looking men.
which is for another podcast.
Yes, we'll do that one day.
Well, if it's got Sigourney Weaver and Zoe Saldana in it, I will watch it.
There you go. Yes. Yeah, I actually don't have like too much to say about that movie, so I'll just pass it on to Bede for one of the movies he's seen recently.
One movie I did see recently is a movie that I absolutely loved. I hadn't seen it before until this first watch, and it was the 1987 Danish film Babette's Feast. Has anyone seen this one?
I have not.
Ooh, yes, I have. Very good.
It is a beautifully made film. I absolutely loved it. It's very sort of weirdly structured as well. I could go into why that is, but, you know, I don't want to ramble on for it. But it sort of tells the story of, like, these two sisters who live in this small town on the coast. And they sort of grew up with this sort of religious father who was a minister of sort of the religious sect in that area. But unfortunately, he was very against, like, the idea of the girls falling in love and getting married. And as they were sort of growing up and become young women, they sort of both had separate suitors who were interested in them. But because of their father and their own beliefs, they sort of knocked the guys back. That was sort of like in two separate parts of the story. And then it comes into the third act of the film where one day a French woman named Babette comes into their lives, and she sort of escaped France because of the revolution, and she and the sisters save her life by letting her become their housekeeper. And many years later, she comes into money and she decides to... as a thank you to the sisters, she wants to make a feast for them and their sort of church on the anniversary of their father's death. And that's pretty much the basic plot, but there's so much beauty to it. Like, it is so beautifully made. The performances are all wonderful. And I can tell you guys this, at the end of this movie, this movie will make you feel hungry after when you watch it, because the feast that Babette makes during this film, and it takes up the entire sort of last 40 minutes of the film, the making of the feast, and it's the food looks spectacular, and it's makes you very, very hungry while you watch it, and it's just so beautifully done, and it's so moving, and it just makes you, it's a feel good movie, and it's so, and it just makes you feel all gooey and happy inside, and I just loved it, and it's I believe it actually won the Oscar for Best Foreign Language Film, and I have to say it was well-deserved. It's such a fantastic movie that that I highly recommend everyone to check out if you haven't seen it.
I have not, but it sounds interesting.
It is. It's such a beautiful film, and I would recommend. I think you'd like this movie as much, Marcy, although I will recommend if you do feel hungry after this movie, make sure you have a great meal on standby, because after I watched this movie, I think I had only like sausages and mashed potatoes. So it was a bit of an anticlimactic moment after watching this film.
Awesome. Yes. And on to B with a film that you've seen recently.
All right. Well, the good movie I saw this week was Imitation of Life. It was directed by Douglas Sirk. Douglas Sirk was very much director of melodrama, and he was quite revolutionary for his time because some of his films dealt with female protagonists. In the case of Imitation of Life, it dealt with a single mother and her daughter, and the single mother meets a African-American woman, and she offers the African-American woman a place to stay. Now, the African-American woman has a daughter that came out of an interracial relationship. So her father was white and her mother is black. And so the single mother and her daughter basically become friends with these other two females, and they, like, grow up together and they learn more and more about each other. And as I was saying before, with Douglas Sirk's movies and female characters, he explores female relationships and that sort of thing, like stuff that wasn't even really thought about or wasn't considered important and considered too trivial back in those days. But if you can look at it now and you can appreciate what Sirk was doing, it's a very, very good sort of a character study as well as a bit of a social commentary at the time. I know how vague that must sound, but it's really something that you have to check out yourself. But it's a very good movie.
Haven't heard of it before. Sounds interesting.
Yeah,
I've heard of it for a while. I've heard of it for a while now, but I've just never really gotten around to seeing it. But I know Douglas Sirk, a lot of his films were the inspiration for Todd Haynes' film Far From Heaven, from what That's I believe. Right. But I definitely want to check out all of his films because they do sound very interesting.
They are. Like, yeah. Do yourself a favour, and if you can find any of Sirk's movies, by all means, they're great.
Yeah, they show them all the time on Foxtel. I'll just have to, like, keep an eye out for it when the next one comes
on. If they're in the movie channels, I don't get those.
Yeah, I think it's on, like, Fox Classics or something like that.
Yeah. Or TCM as well. Yeah.
Okay. Well, back to me. Another film that I finally sat down and watched all of was Thesis from Alejandro Amenábar. And yes, I did decide to finish watching it because I love Eduardo Noriega. There's a bit of a ongoing theme with what I've watched.
Yeah, I wonder what could have given you the idea to check out all these movies with Eduardo Noriega.
Absolutely. I'm so in love with him right now. He's an amazing actor and he's so pretty. But I did actually start watching this a while ago. But the copy that I had these awful subtitles that were, like, cut off, so I had to wait for a copy that actually had really good subtitles. So, yeah, I decided to sit and watch it. And, yeah, I absolutely love the plot for this film. And when I read it, I wanted to see it. As soon as I sort of read, snuff video, yeah, I need to see this movie. So I was definitely very fascinated by just what it was about. And it is about, I'll try to make it brief because I don't want to go on forever. It's about Angela, who's doing a thesis about violence in media. And she finds that her professor is dead. And she sees that it was watching a video. So she shakes the video. And they find out with her new acquaintance, Kemma, I don't know if I'm saying that right, they soon find out that it's actually a snuff video of a girl that used to go to school with them getting tortured and killed. So they try and investigate what happens, and that leads them to Bosco, who's played by Eduardo, who's this very mysterious, evil-looking guy at school, and they pretty much try to uncover the mystery, and that's about all I'll say about it. But it's a really good sort of horror mystery thriller type of film. It's not the greatest. There's definitely a few things that could have been improved, but it definitely has a lot to say about violence in the media, which I found really interesting, in the way that that's kind of portrayed is really interesting, especially at the end. I think it's just a very interesting message. But yeah, it's kind of a cool movie. It's got really cool ideas. It's always fun to watch something that was, you know, from the mid-90s, where video, like VHS, was still a really big element. That's how we watched our movies at home. And you just realize how much of an impact that medium really had, and just how things are just so not going to be like that anymore. I love the whole grainy look of a videotape. That's why I'll never get rid of my VHS player. I will not get rid of the VHS I have. And this movie has kind of reminded me a lot about that. And yeah, I really want to check out more of Amenabad's other films, because the only other one I've actually seen is The Others. I did see Open Your Eyes, but I don't remember a thing about it, so I really need to watch it again. And I know Bede saw this one recently when we did a blogathon, so I don't know if you want to add anything to my blabbing.
Well, I pretty much agree with everything you said. I think it's a really solid debut for Alejandro Amenábar. I don't think it's his best film. I think he would go on to make more interesting films after this, like Open Your Eyes, The Others, what else did he make? The Sea Inside, and also Agora, which are four films that I highly recommend everyone to check out. But this one's a really good thrill. It has a really good sort of interesting and compelling plot at the center of it, and it's very well acted. And as you say, Eduardo Noriega definitely knows how to play that sort of slimy, sort of like, is he or isn't he a bad guy kind of roles, because he has played a lot of those throughout his career.
Yeah, and if I was at that school, I totally would have jumped his bones, just saying. Marcy, shut up. Yes, Bede.
Oh, please don't. We want to hear more.
Bede.
And now you'll go watch The Devil's Backbone right after this podcast.
Oh, God, yes. Marcy, shut up. Sorry. You can continue. I'll shut up.
Alrighty. My turn. Since I talked about Babette's Feast, which I felt was sort of a heartwarming, beautiful, hopeful story, I'm going at the other... another type of film that's on the other end of the spectrum, that's sort of sad and depressing. And that's a film I recently watched called Oslo, August 31st. Has anyone seen this one?
I have not.
Never heard of it.
It is a Norwegian film, and it tells the story of a recovering drug addict by the name of Anders, who is given, like, and he only has like 2 weeks left until rehab, but his doctors allow him to let him go back to the town where he used to live, called Oslo, for a day so he can attend a job interview. And sort of when he goes there along the way, when he goes to the interview and just during the day, he sort of catches up with sort of friends and family from his past, and he sort of at the same time is still confronting his own demons about his drug addiction. And in a way, he's trying to, during the course of the film, trying to find, since because of his addiction, he sort of burnt so many bridges with friends and family and all that. And I guess he's trying to find some reason to, I guess, move on with his life, but he kind of feels during the course of the film that he won't recover and that he will go back to his old ways. And due to circumstances during the film, elements of that start to happen. And it is such a beautifully made film, even though it is a very sad and depressing film, but you sort of, it really takes the character of Anders is such an sympathetic character. And you sort of get taken along his journey during the course of this day, and just to see the pain that he's suffering, and just trying to reach out to people and find a reason to continue on with his life. It's so incredibly depressing and sad, but you can't hope. You feel hope for this guy, but at the same time, you know that things aren't really going to go as well as you want it to be with him. And it actually is a very sort of, like I said, it's a very sympathetic view of a guy who actually has who's a drug addict, and it's so beautifully acted, so incredibly performed by everyone in the cast, especially the lead who plays Anders, whose name is Anders Danielsson Lie. And he's fantastic in the film, and it's award-worthy performance. And I believe this film, like in the late great Roger Ebert's last top 10 list, which was last year, this was actually his number 9 film from last year. So, and it is a great film. If you haven't seen it, is a sad film, but at the same time, it's an incredibly powerful film that I highly recommend everyone to check out. And that's Oslo, August 31st. So, yes.
Cool. I haven't seen it, but it sounds interesting.
It is. I think you guys would like it. Like I said, it is depressing. It's not going to make you feel good afterwards, but it's at the same time, it's still a very rewarding and powerful experience nonetheless. And that's all I have to say about that one.
Cool. B.
All right. Remember when I was talking about Imitation of Life and that being the good movie I saw? Well, on the opposite end of the spectrum, I am sorry to report, and it pains me to say, because my soul has been ripped from my body, I experienced, let's just say, Basic Instinct 2.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
Why? You could have just watched the best parts on the internet.
I know. Don't be ashamed, me. I have seen this movie as well. Unfortunately.
There's only so much on Tumblr that you can see.
Yeah, but you see the best parts on Tumblr.
Well, if one thing I can say positive about the movie is that at least David Morrissey's bits are real. Let's just put it that way.
Yes, they are.
And somehow David Fuelis actually walked out of this movie alive.
Indeed. Amazingly, all three leads do still have a career. Yes, even Sharon Stone still has a credible career, to an extent.
Yes.
But yes, Basic Instinct 2, why? Does not compute.
Yeah, I don't know why they went there, but it's so, so bad.
The shit we go through for Devin Morrissey.
Yeah, the only compliment I can give it is David Morrissey is a bit of all right in that movie.
Yeah, a bit, quite a lot.
Quite a lot, yes.
But yes, back to Tumblr I go.
Yeah, clearly we've been watching movies based solely on who's in them.
I am so shallow. I'm a shallow creature.
It's very lucky that David Morrissey had a career after this movie, because I thought he was really bad at this film. Michael Douglas, let me just say that.
Exactly. Acting-wise, like, everybody was quite shocking, but that is forgivable considering the rest of the movie is shocking in itself, so nothing could have elevated that. Nothing.
It was the 1-2 punch that killed Sharon Stone's career, this film and Catwoman back-to-back. Although I think this movie probably would have been good if, because I think, wasn't David Cronenberg attached to direct this movie at one point?
Yes, he was.
If he did do it, it would have been awesome for some reason.
It probably would have. And I cannot.
Directed by the guy who did the Jackal remake. Who?
And Boy's Life. And he has not made another movie since this one.
I wonder. So
if anyone's career was destroyed by this movie, it was the director.
Makes you wonder.
Yeah. I'll move on to the last movie I'll talk about, because that's like all I've watched in like the last month as far as movies go. I had the opportunity to see a documentary called Head Games, and I've wanted to watch this for quite a long time. Because it actually is something, I mean, it's based on a book that was written by Chris Nowinski. And Chris Nowinski is someone I've been a fan of for quite a while because back in the day when the WWE, the World Wrestling Entertainment, they actually had a show to, like a reality show to get a man and a woman to get like wrestling contracts. And that was Tough Enough. And Chris Nowinski was one of the contestants on that show. And I had this like love-hate relationship with him. But he did win me over, and I was so excited to tune in every week because he did actually end up getting a contract because they liked his work so much. And he was really entertaining. He definitely had this bright future ahead of him for the business. But he got injured, and he completely just had to retire from wrestling. And he's a guy who's had past. He used to be a football player, like American football. And as he got injured, he got a concussion. Now, you might think, yeah, a concussion, it's not that bad. But as Chris found out, and as you find out watching this movie, it is actually a really bad thing. And he suffered really, really bad from his concussion, where he had constant headaches and migraines and all these other problems. And he actually began to investigate head injuries and concussions. And this is what the movie is about. It's about kind of his journey and his experience with his injury, but also examining other people who have really suffered badly from head injuries through sport and concussion. And it actually is really eye-opening about what it has to say, what studies have shown, and just how serious getting a hit to the head can be. And they actually talk to people from all different sports, whether it be like football or even, you know, women's soccer. They really examine, you know, what the risks are and why sport today really need to have a lot more precautions, because getting a hit to the head can be a very serious thing. And they actually speak to people who, you know, suffered memory loss, their personalities changed completely. They became different people. And I think one or two of the football guys who had their concussions actually tried to kill themselves. So it is this really serious subject, and the documentary is really eye-opening, and it's something that I think everyone should see, whether you are interested in the subject or not. You'll definitely just sit and watch the whole thing. And it just really made me think, like, I've had probably a few concussions in my time, and I wonder myself, has it done me damage? And I definitely have a fear for anyone I know that plays sports, that I really want them to be careful, and people in general, to be really careful with your heads. Because you don't need to be knocked out to have a concussion. So it's a really eye-opening documentary about that sort of thing. So I recommend everyone to see it. You can rent it online, or for those who are in the US, it is on Netflix Instant. So yeah, that's my my rant and review for Head Games.
I gotta see this.
Sounds yeah. Good. I really need to see the book.
I definitely would like to check it out at some point as well.
I need to get the book, because it's so interesting, and you're just going to be petrified of ever getting hit in the head. It is something that's very serious, and they actually examine people who've passed away. They actually examined their brains, and they found these same occurring things in the brains of people who've played sports and had a lot of injuries to the head. So it's definitely eye-opening, and yeah, I highly recommend it. And I definitely applaud Chris Nowinski for all his work, that, you know, he got hurt badly, and he just took it upon himself to actually go out, find out about it, raise awareness, and he's done some amazing work. So yeah, definitely check it out, and yeah, support Mr. Nowinski on, you can find him on Facebook and Twitter, and you can find the movie there as well. So, yeah. So yeah, Bede, back to you.
Alrighty, one movie I do want to talk about, and again, this is the opposite end of the spectrum when it came to the last two movies I wanted to talk about, but I figured I want to talk about this one because this one is only getting a very, 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 very limited release in Australia for some bizarre reason, and that is Evil Dead, which is, which I saw at Cinema Nova the other week. And I have to say, I did really enjoy it. Like, it does, it's not perfect, and it, in a way, it kind of suffers kind of the same kind of problems I had with the original film. Like, even though I do like that one, but I don't think it's, like, the most amazing movie ever made. But I did like this one, though. It has, like, some problems, like the first 15 minutes or so are a bit clunky, and some dialogue isn't very good. But once shit hits the fan, it becomes pretty awesome. And, like, there's so, like, are you guys there?
Yeah.
Oh, I wasn't sure because I thought I might have lost you again because I wasn't hearing any reactions. So,
no, I'm just listening.
Oh, sorry. I was a bit worried there for a second. See, that was terrifying. Anyways, yeah, but once shit hits the fan, it becomes completely batshit insane. And, like, I'm not going to say it's the goriest movie of all time. Brain Dead still holds that title. But there's tons of blood in this movie. Limbs go flying everywhere. There's blood, guts, and everything. And I'm really surprised on how far this movie actually went for at least sort of a big Hollywood sort of horror movie. If you sort of notice, I haven't said the word remake the entire time because I don't feel... I'm pretty certain after watching this movie, this film is definitely not a remake. It sort of feels more like a spin-off more than anything. Like it's kind of set 30 or 40 years after the events of the first one. You'll understand what I mean when you see it. So even though it does...
It's more like a sequel sort of thing.
Yeah, it's kind of like a sequel slash... It's more in common with, like, I guess the Friday the 13th remake, which was like a prequel slash sequel crash... slash
who knows what the hell they're doing.
It's like so many slashes in this movie. but I did really enjoy it, and there are a couple of solid performances. I think Jane Levy from the TV show Suburgatory, which I haven't seen, but I know Marcy's a huge fan.
Yeah, I love it. It's such a funny show. You should definitely check it out.
Yeah, and she's fantastic in the film, and all the other casts are pretty fine as well. Although, like, some are better than others, you know, in terms of... And some actors don't really have much in terms of characters, but they make the best of what they have. But it's particularly, like, Lou Taylor Pucci, I think that's... Mm-hmm. I'm probably butchering his very last name, but he's good as well, even though his character is a bit of a dumbass. Like, I mean, if you see a book that's got barbed wire around it, yeah, I wouldn't want to be reading out of it.
I would totally read out of it, and then...
Although what's funny in the movie is, like, he somehow becomes, like, an expert of this book.
I would totally, you know, if I saw, like, the Necronomicon, I would totally read from it, and then I would totally kick the ass of whatever came out of it, because I'm that badass.
Yeah, it is a very fun film. Like, I think you sort of take it on terms of, say, oh, it's not... really a remake, more of a kind of sequels, reboot, whatever. It's fun in that way. Yeah, I enjoyed it. Like, I can see people why people would hate it, but I think if people are taking it to the remake thing too much, because I think it sort of makes enough changes in the film to justify its existence, even though at the same time it does kind of follow similar the original's similar structure as well. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. It has a dark, moody feel to it. I think I'm from Fede Alvarez. I don't know if it's Fede or Fede.
I have no idea.
It's Bede, but just with an F.
but, so Fede.
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 Fede Alvarez. I think he actually has a really good visual style in this movie. And surprisingly, he doesn't ape Sam Raimi's style at all. Because you'd expect with an Evil Dead a new Evil Dead, you think, oh, they're just going to copy Sam Raimi's style, but he has pretty much his own unique style of his own that doesn't ape Raimi's at all. And I did really enjoy this film, and I definitely sorry. I definitely want to check it out at least once more before it leaves the cinema, since it only is showing like 5 cinemas in the entire country. So, I'd say it's worth checking out.
B, do you have any more films that you want to bring up that you've seen recently?
One of them was one that you sent me yourself, Marcy. Rampart with Woody Harrelson.
Yes, I did. I sent you a nice Blu-ray so you could watch it in all its HD glory.
Yes, Marcy is so cool. She sends me these care patches. It's excellent.
Yes.
She sends me terrible care patches.
Well, care you don't want to know what I give her in return. Let's just put it that way. But anyway, I've always thought that Woody Harrelson is a great actor. And it's so good to see him branch out into different paths. Like, you have comedies, dramas, thrillers, all those sorts of things. With Rampart, I found more or less it was a commentary on sort of the priorities of society, because a lot of what's going on in that movie is based on, like, public opinion in terms of, you know, being an embarrassment, basically. So it really makes you think, like, you know, where does our society's priorities really lie? It's a very interesting movie. Great performance by Woody Harrelson, one of his absolute best. So, yeah, great film. If you ever see it, pick it up and enjoy.
Yeah, it's really, really good. I was definitely very impressed with it. I don't know if B'd seen it.
I still haven't seen it yet, though it's one I've been wanting to see for a while, because I actually love the director. Is it Oren Moverman?
I know it's Oren. Yeah, Oren Moverman, because he did The Messenger.
He did The Messengers, and I thought that was a fantastic film. And Woody was amazing in that film as well. And
you'll find Ben Foster in a small role in Rampart.
Yeah, and I've definitely been interested to see this one for a while, but I've just got so many billions of movies. Like, yeah. I'll get around to watching this movie just as soon as I see Cool as Ice. So, yeah, so...
Lord, that has to be a tweet-a-thon movie.
that might appear on a future edition if people vote for it.
Yeah,
the things that Bede goes through for us, people.
He watches it. It's
only like a every 2 to 3 week column, because if I did it like every week, I probably will kill myself at the end. Of...
Release one up at the mental institution.
Exactly.
He's going to be in the bad movie jail. I actually really haven't seen anything else that I can remember. Because I've been unwell and it's just so hard for me to really pay attention to anything, I've just usually had stuff on in the background. So I've just watched a lot of like true crime shows. If you're into true crime shows, I recommend checking out, Forensic Files, because that's always a really good one, and Cold Case Files is really good, and one that I've recently discovered is called The Nightmare Next Door, which is actually about like crimes that happened on a street and they were committed by someone that was nearby. Actually turning out to be a really interesting one. So that's pretty much the kind of stuff I've been watching, and I've watched a bit of just wrestling documentaries. I don't know what the exact name of it was. Maybe it was The Greatest Rivalry, Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels. And it's pretty much those two guys having a sit down with Jim Ross for 2 hours, just talking about their careers, their history, and the infamous Montreal Screwjob and stuff like that. It's really good. If you ever watch those guys back in their day, it's really worth watching. And the other one I just watched recently was the new Mick Foley DVD, which is a 2-hour sort of documentary about his career, and it's really, really good. He's such an interesting person to listen to. He's had such an amazing career. He talks about losing his ear when wrestling in Germany. He talks about doing some really crazy things because he just didn't sort of have the right body to get noticed in wrestling. I think it came out in April or so. It's a new documentary, and if you've ever sort of seen him in wrestling, it's definitely worth watching. It's really, really good. So yeah, that's it from me. B, do you want to wrap up your what you've seen recently?
I've just been really, in terms of TV, I've just been watching a lot of Game of Thrones lately, because it's
like, I need to catch up.
Indeed, you better catch up, because in the third season, they introduce Diana Rigg, of course, from the James Bond movies, and she's fantastic.
Such a fucking badass.
She is so fantastic during this season. I won't spoil who her character is, because, you know, Marcy hasn't seen the third season yet. But
no, I've seen season one and then the first episode of season two. It's just because I've been unwell. I haven't been able to watch it.
Yeah, well, once you do, definitely check out the third season, because I think you'll love it, and you'll definitely love Diana Rigg's performance on the show. I've been touting on Twitter and everywhere that she needs to win an Emmy for this performance. She's just fantastic. She just nails every scene that she's been in so far on the show. But the season so far has been really good. A lot of really cool and crazy shit has been happening in Westeros, and there's only two episodes left of the season, so I'm definitely interested to see where the series is going to end up, because I believe it only covers the first half of the third book, from what I hear. So,
Storm of Swords.
Yeah. So,
For those who have read the books, you know what's coming up next, but I won't say anything else.
Yeah, I don't know, and I've heard that I'm absolutely just going to love what I see of Joffrey in season two, because he's apparently even more of an asshole, and I can't wait. I want a Team Joffrey t-shirt. I will support that bastard till the end of time.
Joffrey does some pretty evil shit during that.
I can't wait. I don't know why. I'm just sick. That's all there is to it.
He is so evil. Even my brother hates him.
Oh, my God. I wanted to punch him in the face, like, in that first episode, and he doesn't even say anything. I was like, what a fucking arrogant little shit. And then when...
And it buzzes me out that he was the little kid in Batman Begins.
I know! Batman, why did you let him live?
Exactly.
No, you Batman.
Should have
done us all a favor. Batman, it was a blessing because I love him. Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching more when, you know, my brain actually functions. We'll wrap.
Definitely recommend it. Hurry up so you can see Diana. You'll love her character on the show.
Cool. We'll finish it off. B, if there's any other things you want to mention before we get on to our main-ish topic.
Not really. I haven't really watched anything else of particular value. I've just been reading various books. I'm a bit of a bookworm. Sometimes I'll read about four books at a time. I'm demented like that. Yeah. But yes, I will never watch Basic Instinct 2 again. So, yes, Tumblr will now be officially my best friend.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
Let's move on to a special segment with a special guest. All right, so I am joined by Lee Gambin, who is here to talk about some really exciting things that are coming up in Melbourne. So, hi, Lee, and welcome to the Super Podcast.
Hi, Marcy. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Thanks for, thanks for coming on. So, you are part of a pretty exciting little organisation. Well, it's not little, but I'm rude, so...
There's a lot of us,
Yes, there is actually a lot of you. It's Cinemaniacs.
Mm-hmm.
And I do believe that you have something exciting coming up in the next few weeks. Do you want to tell us about it?
Yeah, correct. So, I head a group of movie fans. There are, in total, I think, 14 of us. One of us is in LA. It's Millie. And she gets a whole bunch of exclusive video introductions and interviews for the screenings that we're doing. So it's good to have her up there. Basically, what we do is sort of present movies, fan favourites, underrated films, films that never really get any sort of attention, or they're films that have never been played since their initial release, or they could be films that are, you know, quite popular and, you know, everyone, you know, has seen them more than one on one occasion. But this year we're doing 9 Elm Street 2 very early in the year. And then we followed that with Amityville 2, The Possession. And then we did, just recently, a screening of Slumber Party Massacre 2. And coming up at the Nova on June 16th at 6:30, which is a Sunday evening, is Jaws 2. So, yeah, the sequel to Spielberg's Fishy Tale. So, yeah, we've got that, and we've got a special pre-show event with, I'll be doing like an introduction with a little bit of a talk and analysis, I guess, of Jaws 2. And then after that, we're going to have Millie in LA live on video doing an interview with Carl Gottlieb, who wrote the screenplay. Mm-hmm. He also wrote the screenplay to the first film as well, which is great. And then we've got special introductions and chats with actors Keith Gordon, David Elliott, and Donna Wilkes. So, yeah, it's shaping up to be awesome. Tickets are on sale. We have to sell our own tickets, which is a bit of a sort of, a bit of a nuisance, but it's, you know, it's the way things run. So we're doing it via our PayPal account, which we've created. So if you just jump on Facebook or find us on Facebook, Cinemaniacs will, you know, figure out how to do it. And pre-booking and booking is absolutely essential because there won't be any tickets available on the door. Which is another annoyance, but oh well, we have to play by rules. And yeah, so Jaws 2, Sunday the June 16th at 6:30 at the Nova. So yeah, much to come along. Yeah.
Yes, well, I'm planning to come along with Bede, who's the other dude on the podcast. So we're hoping to be there. So, yeah, anyone who is in Melbourne or will be in Melbourne at that time, come along, because Jaws 2 is an awesome and underrated movie, if I do say so myself.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a fun film. It's, you know, it taps in on the teen market. It was, you know, it's kind of a little bit of a precursor to the sort of, you know, slasher films that sort of came out after it. We have a whole bunch of sort of, you know, attractive, nubile, young teenagers getting killed one by one by, you know, this underwater leviathan. And the beauty of Jaws 2 is that even the shark itself is kind of monstrousized even more by its scarring, like if you remember it getting burnt. So it kind of has this kind of foreshadowing of, you know, the killer in the burning and Freddy Krueger and whatnot. So it's kind of a very cool sort of, you know, a nice hybrid of slasher film and eco-horror. So
yes.
I think that's pretty cool.
It is very cool. What other screenings are coming up for the rest of the year?
Yeah, so just, I won't speak too far ahead in advance, but just so the audiences have a chance to catch up. But the next one is in July, and that will be Evil Dead 2. So that's a, you know, huge fan favourite.
Yeah.
So we're excited to screen that. That was chosen by other team members more so than me, because I have to be brutally honest, I'm not the hugest fan of Evil Dead 2. But that's okay, you know, it's not all about my choices. And then after that, we have a very controversial choice, because technically it is a prequel, but then if you want to say that this is also Amityville 2 is a prequel, but we're still screening it, and it's Twin Peaks Firewalk With Me, which we'll be screening later in the year.
Yes.
And that'll be after Evil Dead 2.
I'll be coming to that, definitely.
Yeah, I think Melbourne is one of the chief cities that is obsessed with Twin Peaks. People love it. And I've spoken to people from Twin Peaks, and they've all said that, yeah, a lot of their fan mail and a lot of their requests for signed 8x10 and whatnot come from Melbourne. Mm. So that's an interesting thing. Must be the dark, cold weather.
I don't know, must be the weirdos that live around the place.
Yeah.
That's the impression I got anyway.
I think it's very similar to, I think Melbourne is such a sort of sister city to, you know, Seattle or Portland, and we kind of have a strange affinity for the Pacific Northwest of America. Like, if you look at our music scene, you know, especially in the 90s, it was very, very akin. So I think Twin Peaks tapped into that really well. So yeah, that's coming up. So
exciting.
Sorry, what you, I just,
yeah,
go for it.
Awesome. Well, I'm excited. I want to come to as many screenings as I can, health permitting, which is always my freaking case. Now, the other thing that we want to talk about is your book.
Mm-hmm.
Which
you've purchased.
I have, and I'm reading, and unfortunately I'm delayed in reading it as well because my health sucks. Every time I look at writing, I just want to throw up, so that doesn't help trying to read.
Okay.
But, yeah, I'll get there and I'll write your review. But, yeah, obviously, we want...
Are you enjoying it?
I am. I loved the introduction because it put me in the mindset of, like, oh, my God, we're so much alike. Because I used to watch horror movies and stuff with my cousins and I wasn't allowed to.
Right.
And we used to have sleepovers. I'm like, oh, my God, you're so much like me.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's, yeah, definitely suburban, you know, kids growing up in the 80s. We all just loved our films, which is great. It's sad for kids now. They sort of, you know, they get distracted so easily. It's sad.
Yeah.
But yeah, I wrote that book a couple of years ago. It came out last year in October. And it's called Massacred by Mother Nature, Exploring the Natural Horror Film. So it's all about eco-horror films. And it's a film analysis book, but it's also sort of very personal and sentimental. And it's kind of, it's serious film analysis, but as well as being, you know, a love letter to these movies, which are, you know, it's a subgenre that gets ignored all the time. It doesn't make sense to me because, you know, Jaws, which is, you know, the king of all the eco-horror films, that and The Birds, I guess, you know, changed the way films were made. It was a huge success. It influenced a whole generation of filmmakers and, you know, audiences treated films in a different light. So, and that movie was an eco-horror film. So I never understood why the eco-horror subgenre was overlooked when everyone got, you know, goes on about gore films or slasher films or, you know, vampires or whatnot. Yeah, the terror of the natural world is always overlooked. So I wrote that, and yeah, it's available at Amazon.com if you look for it. Just search in the search engine for Lee Gambin or the book title. But yeah, get yourself a copy. But yeah, the other book I'm working on at the moment is all about the making of Brian De Palma's Carrie. So and I'm writing that with a co-writer who lives in the US. And that's going beautifully, really good.
Excellent.
And we've got a whole bunch of interviews with a whole bunch of people involved with Carrie, including Stephen King and Brian De Palma and Sissy Spacek and Piper Laurie, etc., etc. We've got contributions ranging from, you know, George Lucas all the way through to, you know, Sandra Locke, you know, who talks about how she was actually in the running to play Carrie. So it's going to be an exhaustive, you know, full book. So that's pretty exciting. And I'm not sure if people keep asking about dates as to publication release, and I can't give them one because it's just, it's still a work in progress, absolutely.
Yeah, I've been following the Facebook progress. Sounds very exciting.
Yeah, cool.
Big fan of that movie. I've got I've got a small poster on my wall that my mum ripped, which I'm not happy about. But she's still there, taped together.
Why did she rip it?
Because she's mean. I know it was an accident, but I still yelled at her for it.
Okay. So, yeah, so that's coming up as well. But, yeah, exciting. Definitely get Massacred by Mother Nature. If you love films like Squirm and Orca and The Pact and Peugeot and Grizzly, etc., etc., yeah, you'll love that book, hopefully. And there's also interviews in there with a whole bunch of people involved in those films. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's finding it very interesting so far, and I'm looking forward to getting back into it. I'm hoping I'll be a bit better by the end of this week to start reading again, because I hate not being able to read and write, because that's my passion.
You need to be healthy to read.
Yes, if I can look at a page and I don't want to throw up, that's good.
Okay.
So, I want to get back into it. I hate stopping a book halfway through. I'm still reading Arnold Schwarzenegger's book, but that is, like, humongous.
Oh, wow. So how is that?
That's really good. I did not expect to love it, but I'm loving it. I love hearing his stories about growing up, going around, being, you know, into the whole body circuit and going to LA and, oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Really interesting.
It's really annoying that he's coming here and doing a talk about his film work. Like, I just find that ridiculous. Like, they're bringing him down to, you probably know about this, to talk about finances or something.
Yeah, I'm like, hello, you should be talking about movies and bodies and stuff. Yeah, I don't want to really pay that money to go see him talk about something I don't care about.
That's right. Absolutely. But yeah, so Jaws 2, if you go on Facebook, you can find the event, and you can book through the Cinemaniacs PayPal account and go from there. But yeah, it's $15 cheap. You can drink in the cinema at the Nova, which is nice.
Yes, that's true.
And yeah, there's all those extra frills. Plus, we'll be having a giveaway at the end of the screening. And we just, yeah, want more and more people, more movie lovers to come and support Cinemaniacs because, you know, we're pretty much one of a kind. We're giving the screenings proper respect, you know, like a respectful screening, but we want to make it fun. We want to build this sort of, you know, nice community of film lovers. Rather than just having a cold screening, we want to make it warm and inviting, and everyone can, you know, bring something to the table. We're always open for suggestions for next year. We're still deciding what we're doing for our theme for next year, which we'll have an announcement at the end of the year about. But, yeah, no, it's going to be good and fun. And the and on another note, the other screenings, what we call the in-betweener screenings, are all at the Tote Hotel, which is in Collingwood, and that's a favourite of many people. And we have the screenings upstairs in the Cobra Bar, which is a lovely sort of tiki-designed cocktail bar. So, yeah, it's all good, and, yeah, just feel free to follow us on Facebook and go from there. But, yeah, Cinemaniacs just gets better and grows better, and, yeah, it'll be cool.
Exciting.
So, can't wait to draw too.
Yes, very exciting, and, yeah, I'll be dragging my corpse along because I'm sure I'll be in that state by the time it comes along. So yeah, recommend it to the listeners and yeah, everyone that likes the page, go like Cinemaniacs and yeah, get involved because it's good, and get the book because it's really good so far. I'm recommending it. I haven't finished it. That's high praise. Well, thank you for coming on and hijacking the podcast for a little bit. Yeah, feel free
to... Thank you for having me. Thank you for making space for me.
Feel free to come back on, join us. You can come on for a full episode and talk absolute shit with us.
Right, sounds good.
Thank you.
Thanks, Marcy.
Yeah, let's move on to our sort of main, well, I guess it's our main topic. I've kind of been dreading talking about it because this movie just seems to have taken a life of its own on the internet with all these opinions and people being very hateful about opinions and stuff like that. So, yeah, we're obviously going to talk about Star Trek Into Darkness. It came out in Australia a week early, so we all saw it before everyone else.
Yep.
And, yeah, apparently on the internet, you can't say that this movie has flaws because you're whinging and nitpicking and people need to calm down because it's just a movie, but I don't remember those same people saying that when Prometheus came out because they were the ones bitching about it the most. So that's my little rant about it. I just want to say everyone is entitled to their opinions. You are allowed to criticize and critique a movie. If you don't sort of, you know, have proper discussions, I just don't think cinema will survive. If you want to settle for mediocrity and say it's great when it's not. You know, you've got to accept every movie does have flaws, but even, you know, the greatest of the great still have flaws. There's nothing wrong with saying that, you know, they're flawed. You know what I mean? And I just think people are just taking things way too much. Like, I never said I didn't like this movie, but apparently people are just assuming that's what I said. But I, at the same time, I kind of do feel like we've had so many mediocre blockbusters that when something good comes out, everyone says it's so fantastic when it's not actually that great when you really sit down and look at it. And I don't think that we should have to settle for something mediocre. We should really be getting great films. So I hope Hollywood really brings it with their blockbusters. With that said, I'll just say my piece about this film. I didn't mind it. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. I'm kind of in the middle. There's things that I like about it. There are things I don't like about it. And I think its strengths lie with its cast. And this time around, I feel like they're a lot stronger because it doesn't feel like they're imitating the characters from the old series and movies. They're really sort of developing their own characters a bit more. So their personalities are a little bit different. And I think it's really good that they're kind of coming around to, you know, bringing something fresh and new to these characters, which, you know, they kind of established that with the 2009 film. And I think that's really good. There's a good rapport with the actors. And there is actually quite a bit of really interesting and good action in the film, which I don't mind. And I think at its core, there's some really interesting ideas. And the story, I think, for the most part, it's got something interesting there. While I don't think it all makes complete sense, I do think it's quite interesting and it's, you know, something interesting to see unfold. I don't think there's too much of a dull moment in this film. I will say, you know, spoiler alert, because there's no way to discuss it without spoilers. Some of my favourite scenes, my favourite scenes in this movie actually took place between Kirk and Pike, played by Chris Pine, and one of my other boyfriends, Bruce Greenwood. There's just this great chemistry between them. They have this great rapport, and their scenes are really, really great. And I actually think they're the best in the film, because they just work so well. And I also really liked Benedict Cumberbatch. I don't know if that's pronouncing it right. He's a fantastic actor. And I actually think he's really good in this film. It's definitely very different. He sort of rolls with it. He definitely has an interesting chemistry with the cast. So, yeah, I think he does a really good job. I really actually liked how they portrayed the Klingons, which I wasn't expecting. They kind of have a bit of a different look, which I think works really well. I'm not sure I actually agree with them getting taken out so easily because they're Klingons. But I think that was more to establish the power of Benedict's character. So I can understand where that's coming from. But, yeah, their scenes are actually really good. I would love to see them sort of in a bigger role in the next movie. It's actually a very bright and really good-looking film. I know a lot of people nitpick, because it is nitpicking, about the lens flare stuff. And for the most part, it didn't bother me at all. I barely noticed it. But it really bothered me, and it looks so amateurish. When there's scenes on the bridge and you cannot fucking see the person's face because there's a lens flare in front of it. Seriously, that's really bad. And I guess kind of on the downside, a lot of stuff in the script just doesn't make a lot of sense. There's stuff there just because the plot says so. It's there to sort of advance the story in the easiest way, which for me, it's not the smartest thing. I really think it needs to make sense, but they really just wanted this movie to hurry up, is what I gathered. And, you know, I know that JJ wasn't a fan of Star Trek. It's so apparent that he really wanted it to be fresh and different. But at the same time, I do feel like he's trying to make it like Star Wars, and it's not Star Wars. And it's kind of why I think he's actually more perfect for Star Wars than Star Trek. And I think the movie actually really falls apart in the third act because it tries to be a remake of Wrath of Khan and it does not work. And I think when they sort of establish, you know, we've changed the timeline, we're going to do our own stories, we're going to make it fresh. That's the idea I got watching the 2009 film. Then I come and see this and I'm like, it's not its own film. It's trying to take things from other Star Trek movies and sort of try and please everyone when it really should have just been a fresh, completely fresh. And it wasn't. And I think it worked with what they did. I know that some people really liked it, and that's good that it worked for you, but it didn't work for me. So, I mean, I found myself laughing and cringing because I just thought it was handled really, really badly. And they use plot devices that are really silly, and I just think that's lazy writing. So, yeah, that's my rant. And I should add, I'm a massive Star Trek fan. I've been watching Star Trek since I was 3 years old when The Next Generation started. So, yeah, I'm a massive Star Trek fan, and I wouldn't say that I'm, like, you know, I don't know what the right word is, like a purist. Like, I was fully, like, acceptant of the idea that everything's going to change. It sort of took me a little bit to get used to it because it was so different. But I was very open to having a fresh, new universe, different stories, you know, pretty much like a just a different timeline, which is something they do in comics quite often. And I'm very, you know, I can admit when Star Trek is shit because there is a lot of shit in Star Trek. I'm not someone who goes around saying it's the absolute most perfect thing ever because it's not. But, yeah, if, you know, I'm watching a film, well, no matter what it is, if there's problems with it, I'm going to address it. If there's really good things, I'll address it. So that's just how I feel about this movie. Yeah, it's kind of in the middle for me. I'd say 3 out of 5 as my rating. There's definitely a lot of things to love about it, but then there's other things that just didn't work for me personally. Yeah, so I'll hand it over to Bede. I just felt like I needed to get all that out. So, yeah, we can have a bit more of a discussion with everyone. Yeah, FB, do you want to throw something out there?
Alrighty. Well, I have to admit, Marty, that I needed... Well, the first time... I can hear an echo on myself. But anyways, I have to admit, when the first time I watched this film, I wasn't sure what to make of it. Like, I did enjoy it, but at the same time, I did have lots of problems with it, and I felt like I needed to see the film again as soon as possible, just so I can just sum up my feelings about it. And when I watched it a second time, my feelings on it is that I think it is a really enjoyable film. Like, it is fun. Like, it's not a boring film at all. Like, there's no moment in the film that lags or drags or bores you. Like, it is entertaining from beginning to end. I think the first two halves of the movie are pretty strong. Like, it has some really interesting things that do happen, and also some great performances, and it's well directed. Like, there's one section of the movie which kind of almost plays like a silent movie when you, like, one sort of 10-minute sequence, and I think you guys know which one that I'm talking about. I thought that whole section was fantastic. Like, it says so much without even saying anything, because I think only 3 lines are only uttered at that entire 10-minute span. And it, like, some, like, at Star Trek, like, Star Trek has always been about exploring themes in our modern-day world, but putting it in a sci-fi setting. Like, it does explore at least the first two halves about terrorism and all that. I think it explores that. But at the same time, it does start to sort of fall apart a bit as soon as you find out who Benedict Cumberbatch's character is, I assume we'll go into.
Yeah, I mean, he is soon. Khan. I mean, obviously, yeah. Everyone knew that he was. Yeah. I think it really sort of falls apart when it just suddenly becomes a revenge movie. Mm. And, you know, they had an opportunity to sort of have Khan, say, become, you know, a decent guy, but instead he's suddenly like, oh my God, I've got to kill everyone. It comes out of nowhere. There's no really good deep development, and they had the opportunities to do it. It's just, it's so lazy.
I agree with that. Like, it sets it up because Khan is very sympathetic in this movie because he has a reason why.
I mean, the original character, like, you understand his motivations.
Yeah.
And he is kind of, you know, you almost feel like he is justified. But I should add, and I know this is kind of going into, like, really geeky territory, but this universe, their changes only take place from Kirk's birth. So technically, Khan should not have been a white British man. So they made that change. So basically they've just rechanged the universe because Khan originally, you know, his original character and what he's actually, you know, still meant to be, he is from Asia with a Mongolian ancestry and he ruled in the 1990s during the eugenics wars. And that's his backstory.
Yep.
And that is something that shouldn't have changed because the universe only changed from Kirk's birth. But they actually don't bring up any of this. And if they wanted to bring in this character, that stuff is still there. So, I mean, I don't get, like, do they want it to be completely fresh, have a different background? Because that just doesn't make any sense. I just think they probably didn't do enough, I don't know, background work. It's just the script just feels very, very lazy. Yeah, and that's just me sort of going into, like, fanboy-ish complaints, but that's something that I was just like, wait a second. Yeah, but sorry, I'll shut off because I'm, like, sounding like a real big nerd right now.
I can agree with that. I mean, not the nerd part, but the other stuff. I do agree because, because from what I read, Khan was from Asia. I think he was Indian, wasn't he? Or I believe he was meant to be. Of course, in the 1960s, they couldn't get Indian actors to play.
They just got Ricardo Montalban to do it.
It was Mexican, so they was like, oh, he's close enough. But at the same time, it's like, I think the film for me personally, like, I'm not against the idea of bringing Khan in this new rebooted universe. But I think what the film did, I think how they brought him into the series, at least with this film, was kind of poorly done. I think the film probably would have had a much stronger impact if it wasn't Khan. Maybe it was a whole new original character.
Yeah, I kind of actually think that they sort of explained why he was woken up early, because he was found differently, because the universe, the thing has changed. And then you've got, like, Peter Weller, Admiral Marcus, who's awesome, by the way.
He's the real villain of the...
Yeah, I mean, why not concentrate on having him, like, really be bad? And why not have sort of Khan have a new leaf and not be a bad guy? Like, you know, that would have been awesome. That would have been different. You know, I think they could have really done something really intelligent with it. But I think it's really just gets so lazy in that third act.
Yeah.
And I might add, I don't like the beginning either. It's really stupid. It's there just to be this big scene where they actually pay no attention to what the hell they're doing.
And why is the Enterprise on the water for no
apparent reason? It's pretty much how I feel about, like, the opening of Generations. It's so stupid, but they sort of have it to establish certain things, and they sort of need to establish certain things at the beginning, but it's just, it's really stupid. Anyway,
but before I shut up, what Marcy. I need to say, I want to hear what B has.
Yeah, sorry, B. I don't shut up when it comes to this movie.
All right. Well, I want to say right off the bat that although I casually watch the occasional episodes, and I have at some point seen most of the Star Trek films, I'm not much of a huge fan. I don't hate them whatsoever, and my favourite Star Trek captain is Captain Janeway because she's a fucking badass.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Girl power. Yeah.
But I think when I hear you two talking about the particulars about the Star Trek universe and how it differs from this new canon that J.J. Abrams has established, when I first saw the movie, I quite liked it. But the more I started to think about it, between when I saw it and before this podcast, I started to go over in my head about the actual details in the film that I didn't like. It never even occurred to me the whole sort of backstory about Khan differing from the movies and from the television series. So I'm afraid I can't really elaborate much on that. But well, for one thing, I certainly do agree that the actors are the strongest point of the movie. They're the ones who, if anything, they're the ones who come through as the real champions. Like, for example, what Marcy said with Bruce Greenwood and Chris Pine, you have such a fantastic platonic male relationship between those two because you really buy it. There's integrity in those characters and their interactions. Same thing with Kirk and Spock and Uhura. You know, it's money. Like, they really do feel more secure in their roles compared to the way they were in the first movie. So that was a fantastic point. The second point being that definitely Benedict Cumberbatch was a fantastic sort of addition to the movie. So, yeah, the way he was initially portrayed to be as this sympathetic character, like, he was ruthless and he was dangerous, but at the same time, he wasn't one-dimensional. And the more I thought about it, and based on what you two were saying about him sort of, like, well, rather not him, but the script itself dropping the ball in terms of the characterization, like, yeah, he really did become more of a brainless, murdering automaton towards the end. It's like, yeah, this fantastic character development and character motivation. I would really would have liked to have seen John Harrison, or Khan, whatever you want to call him for that matter, to be more of an anti-hero more than a villain. Because Peter Weller's character was definitely the most villainous of the piece. Like, there was nothing his character was not willing to do in order to pursue his goals. At least Khan was more open to reasoning, even if he was basically going to use, you know, Kirk and the rest of them to his own ends. But still, he was intelligent in the way that he thought these things out. And when you get a character who is just, who is prepared to, like, expose himself the way he does in that movie, you tend to feel more for him. And suddenly when he turns around and becomes this maniac murdering machine, it's like, where did this, what happened? Where did this other guy come from? You know, it was confusing. As much as I love watching Cumberbatch and hearing that awesome voice of his, but
still, oh, it's so good.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, once again, I'm not a huge Star Trek fan, and I can only judge from the merits of what I saw in the movie. There is heaps to like in terms of, like, the action's fantastic. Like, it's very kinetic. It's always on the go. It's like a freight train that just won't stop. So the action scenes were quite well done when you could see them, lens flare notwithstanding. And some of the visual effects looked amazing, like on the planet to begin with. I've been meaning to ask, like, what was the whole meaning of that opening scene with the planet and the natives and all of that? Was there an actual purpose that it served in the story proper, or is that more like just a little prologue just to see where the characters were?
What it was establishing was that they were on this planet and it was going to destroy the life on the planet because of the volcano. And the Star Trek Prime Directive states that they cannot interfere with the course of, like a civilization's development. So they actually should not have, A, made themselves visible, or B, stopped the volcano. But I would say that Spock always said, like, was saying, you know, you can't be seen and stuff like that. It violates the Prime Directive, but at the same time, Spock is violating it to go into the volcano to stop it. And I believe his motivation does come from the fact that Vulcan was destroyed in the previous film. So I think he has something with that, but it's not really, they don't really say much there.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of, what happens there sort of plays back with the characters later. But yeah, the ship underwater is just really stupid. And but yeah, I believe that was what they were trying to get across, but they could have gotten across in a much smarter and better way.
Yeah. I think the movie also establishes that Kirk doesn't play by the rules, even when so that's why Pike sort of chews him out in that meeting, because he wasn't following the rules, basically. Mm-hmm. He wasn't supposed to say, he was supposed to, like, as you say, the Prime Directive, not to get involved in, in other planets, you know, things and all that. But since he did, he was going against the rules, and that's why the Starfleet
it's really silly because Spock really shouldn't have, you know, done what he was doing, but I think he sort of had a bit of a motivation to be, you know, not logical. It sort of, it says that, you know, that they cannot interfere with the development in the alien life and culture. They cannot let them have knowledge that they would not have, you know, had to begin with. And it just sort of stuffs it up completely. It's like, why the hell did they even do that for? It's just, it's a scene to sort of get everyone going, have this big, exciting action scene, but it's incredibly stupid.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I didn't mind it personally, but I can see where you're coming from.
Yeah, it could have been done a lot better. Again, I think this is such a lazy film with its script.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's probably my sort of big thing was that with that opening scene, considering it starts all big and brassy and colourful, and then it's sort of like, reverts into a more of a political thriller with the terrorist attack. It's like that was definitely a huge, huge jump in terms of story tone.
Yeah, I think you know they need. I guess they needed some kind of an event to sort of, I don't know, demote Kirk and send Spock away. But then 5 minutes later, they're back on the Enterprise anyway.
Mm.
It's just a bit silly.
Can I just say, like, I mentioned this on Twitter the other day, and I think you sort of commented on what I said. This movie just made me, like, love and appreciate Iron Man 3 so much more.
Yeah.
Because that movie, like, it's interesting, like, watching the fanboy reaction to that film and to this one. And I think, even though I've pretty much usually disagree with this guy, but Devin Faraci from Badass Digest, he wrote this tweet a while ago saying that this will be the summer where fanboys will hate the fan challenging of Iron Man 3 but love the fan servicing of Star Trek Into Darkness. And I think he has a really good point there. And he also wrote this really good article called How Shane Black Did the Mystery Box Better Than J.J. Abrams. Because
we didn't see it coming in Iron Man 3. At least I didn't really.
I didn't see it coming either. But and that's what
everyone freaking knew and expected that he was going to be Khan. Like,
yeah, like pretty much it was like the West kept secret in Hollywood.
The thing was, in the movie, right? They do this dramatic, like close, like they're doing this closing up shot on his face, and they're playing this dramatic music that gets louder and louder. And it goes on for, I don't know, 30 seconds or a minute. We don't even know who he is. And it's like, yeah, he's Khan.
Yeah.
It's there for, like, no reason. And it's just weird.
Yeah. And the fact that they just met, like, for some bizarre reason, his character is called John Harrison for the first half. It doesn't make sense other than when J.J. Abrams does the mystery box thing, it can work really well. Like, only look at the first Star Trek movie. I mean, who was not shocked by the fact that a Vulcan was blown up in that movie? Like, they kept
stuff like that. I mean, we never would have guessed that happened.
Yeah, even though we should have, because there was a planet in the trailer blown up, but didn't know
which one. We wouldn't know which one. But, like, it just seems so obvious because everyone's like, oh, they're going to follow the movies. But that doesn't make any sense because they're so much younger than the movies. Why the hell would it follow the movies for?
Yeah, like
I don't know. I'm just getting into it now. I'm becoming a fanboy with a vagina.
I kind of knew this. It was going to be like I was hoping that it would even just be a character called John Harrison, or maybe a little known villain in the Star Trek universe. I don't know. A part of me kind of wished maybe Gary Mitchell, because I've never seen the episodes he was in, but I actually reading up on him, he actually sounded like a really interesting villain. Because he sort of has, like, godlike powers and all that. And I thought that would be pretty cool. But I guess I kind of initially thought it was going to be Khan because I think it wasn't originally Benicio del Toro and Edgar Ramirez were in talks to play the villain role in this movie.
If Edgar Ramirez had played the villain, I would have, like, wet myself.
Yeah, because, like, if you think about it, because Ricardo Montalban was Mexican and they're sort of, and Benicio del Toro and Ramirez are sort of Mexican and Spanish oriented, and that's probably what they were going to go for. Instead, they just go, oh, we'll just get a white British guy to play this role.
I just think they should have either not had the character at all or done something different.
Yeah.
I just feel like they kind of established that, hey, we're going to be different. We can take on different storylines. Why the hell didn't you just do that?
You know, it'd be cool if, like, as I was saying before, maybe they should build it up thinking, oh, it's going to be Khan, and then make it not be Khan at all.
They should have had it be, like, Charlie X from the original series.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, it's weird, though. Like, I think Cumberbatch is fine in the movie. I think he does the best with what he's given, even though it is sort of on page, it's kind of a weak villain role. But I think if they sort of did something different, it probably would have been much stronger. Although, to me, Khan isn't Khan if he doesn't have his, like, shirt open and has a glistening chest. That's just...
I know. They should have so done that. Maybe he'll come back in, like, movie 5 or something.
And here's the thing. I want a plot hole. There's a plot hole at the end of this movie that doesn't make sense. Like, for some reason, Khan's blood can cure people.
Yeah. Because
it was set up early in the movie.
And with a, like, tribble, no less.
Yeah, the tribble. And, like, it's like they fit... Because, like, Kurt's dying, and it's like, oh, we need hit.
We need the blood,
but couldn't they have just got the blood from the other 72?
Yeah, but it's just, it's so lazy.
They just had a final chase scene just for
they the needed, they needed, oh, we need another action scene, but it's just, it's so lazy. For the next movie, please have a different freaking director and writers or writer or a writer-director, because I just don't want to see these people involved anymore.
Although it's funny, though, I think I read someone made a comment and I thought it was hilarious. So in this universe,
yeah.
Was it the odd or even numbers?
In the original series, it's the even numbers that are the good movies. In this series, it'll be the even numbers that are shit. So, yeah. But, you know, they should have left Kirk dead. Then the third movie could have been a reboot of Search for Spock, but it could have been Search for Kirk.
That'd have been awesome.
I actually thought that's what they were going to do until they're like, oh, my God, his blood can cure him. Like, facepalm.
I have to say this, and I think you guys will agree. The most unintentionally hilarious moment of all time is when Spock goes, Kah!
That was really bad. I cringed.
I shook my head in the cinema.
My head hurt from cringing. I'm like, that was awful. I'm like, why is he yelling that for? Shouldn't he be going, Admiral Marcus? It was all his fault, really.
Exactly.
Come on, man.
Also, can we also talk about how pointless Alice Eve's character was in this movie?
She was like,
doesn't serve the plot at all, other than giving us a quick scene of her underwear.
I'm not going to complain about seeing her in her underwear, because she's one of the most good-looking, women on the planet. But her character was pretty weak. Like, they really should have established her more.
Yeah, her character's more of a plot point rather than a character.
She's just a plot device. But then I know everyone's kind of, like, complaining about that underwear scene, but I think it's just because it feels like it comes out of nowhere because her characters really serve no purpose, that it does feel gratuitous.
Mm.
But it sort of shows a bit of a flirt between them because they possibly, might want to have that romance. But they also show that Kirk's a freaking pervert.
Yeah, and also, like, she wasn't shy about it. She wasn't like, oh, stop looking at me or anything like that when he turned around. Because I would have. I would have bitch slapped him. I know, like, Carol Marcus is supposed to be the mother of Kirk's child and all that, but they don't really set up their relationship at all in the movie. Like, they probably will in the sequel, but, yeah, it just wasn't needed. Like, her character just wasn't needed, other than the fact that RoboCop's in this movie.
Yeah.
He was awesome, by the way. It's cool to see Peter Weller back on the big screen again.
Yeah, but then, like, they sort of, their thing sort of lasts, like, a second that she's there. And, my biggest complaint, really, is this is such a lazy script. So please, for the love of God, these guys just stop writing.
Mostly just Damon Lindelof until, they should just go back to television because they're television writers, not film.
I actually have an idea of who I want to see write and direct a future Star Trek movie, but I'm going to save that for an article when I have a brain. Sorry, I feel like B hasn't had much of a chance to say anything. I feel bad. Sorry, B.
All right. well, I don't really have much to add that would be particularly revolutionary in what you two were discussing. Like, I am aware that Carol Marcus was meant to be Captain Kirk's baby daddy. But in terms of the character and the way she's portrayed in the movie, yes, she does save Bones from a certain death by disarming that really nasty bomb, but it's interesting because you had these two strong female characters, like you had Uhura on the bridge and you had Carolyn Marcus, but you never saw those two interact. And I think I would have thought that those two would definitely have spoken to each other and share each other's knowledge and that sort of thing. It would have been nice to have seen more communication between all the characters, like, as human beings, rather than just, you know, oh, the Klingons are attacking the starboard bow, and, oh, no, we're about to explode, or, oh, no, the nuclear reactor's about to go off. I'd like to see more human connection between the characters, and I don't think, in that case, Carolyn Marcus didn't have much of a human anchor in the story. She was there to serve a purpose, yes, and, you know, Alice Eve, you could do a lot worse than her. But I just felt that she didn't have the necessary human element for her character. And that is a shame, because I really would like to see more strong female characters on the screen, especially in a sci-fi movie. And Carolyn Marcus wasn't my idea of one, but that's just me.
I think Uhura is a pretty strong character.
Carol Marcus and Uhura, they just met and they had shared a moment of like, did Kirk see you in your underwear too? And it's like, yeah.
Yes! Yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Because that happened in the first movie as well. But, you know, that's because...
That's sort of like a good human moment. Like, yeah. It's got a sense of humor, and you can get to... You see these two, like, women talking to each other rather than just, like, you know, these two constructs on a page, you know?
Yeah. All I basically can say is about... Like, it is a solid movie. Like, I did enjoy it, but it is very, very, very problematic. And I would suggest people to go check out Iron Man 3 again, because it actually did everything better than this film. Because they're kind of both the same movie when you think about it. But it does it much, much better. And actually, it's, I guess, misdirection when it comes to its villain is actually much more interesting. And
yes.
But, of course, you know, fanboys want the same old crap.
Well,
and
fuck
not,
the fanboys.
Exactly.
On this podcast, we don't like fanboys, even though I probably sounded like a fanboy, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I agree. Like,
I will probably watch this movie again. It'll probably be something that I can just put on and watch and not really think too much about.
Yeah.
And movies like that are fine. They're not the greatest out there, like, this isn't the greatest, but, you know, it can be a good time waster.
Yeah.
You know... But because it is, like, a strong sci-fi film, I do think, like, we really need to sort of pay attention to things that happen. It's not Fast Five. That movie never claims that it's, like, a freaking intelligent movie. It's there just to be silly entertainment. It's meant to, you know, just not really make that much sense. But this is Star Trek. Star Trek really has a lot of elements and themes to it, and... I don't like it when it feels lazy, and I am not someone who says Star Trek is perfect. Has anyone seen the ninth movie? That is shockingly crap.
Or even The Final Frontier, or even Insurrection. That was the blandest of the bland.
Insurrection is number 9.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Exactly. It's shit. And, you know, Generations is a fun movie, but it's incredibly flawed and stupid. But, you know... I don't see anyone like saying, you know, other things. It's just like, oh, apparently you can't say anything about this movie unless it's completely praising it.
Yeah.
It's just silly.
Fanboys, like, I love my movies as well. Like, I acknowledge flaws in me. I mean, I still love The Dark Knight Rises, even though I still recognize that as a flawed film and amongst other movies as well. But I think if you recognize the flaws and accept them, that's fine. But it's just, I think, yeah, I just think it's just a fanboy thing. It's like, once the sort of the hype dies down and all that, and once they bring out those honest trailers or CinemaSin videos, I think people probably realize that, yeah, it's not it's pretty flawed. But yeah, I would say, like I said, I still enjoy the movie, but it definitely is my first disappointment of the blockbuster season so far. Mm. And go see Iron Man 3, because that movie needs as much love and attention as it possibly can, because that is so better. Not that I'm plugging that movie, but, you know, I'm just
saying. Apparently not. Yeah. This, look, it could have been so much better, but it is what it is. It's there. And, you know, if you love this movie, that's totally fine. No one's saying that it's not fine. You're allowed to love this movie. I just don't get why people don't want to accept anything bad about it or negative or discussing its flaws. It's really silly. And the people that I've seen say things like, calm down, it's just a movie. Excuse me, a year ago you were bitching completely about how sucky Prometheus was. So why don't you shut up, because that was just a movie. I'm sorry, but yeah. People are just really stupid right
that's
now.
That's a whole different story altogether.
It kind of just occurred to me, but didn't Damon Lindelof also write Prometheus?
He did!
I will say this, I will watch Into Darkness more than Prometheus. Because that was, like, Prometheus was one of those movies that, even though it was one of those movies where I watch a movie and then I pick it apart afterwards. It's just like while I'm watching that movie, it's like I'm picking it apart as I'm watching it. But yeah, so I think Damon Lindelof should just stick to TV. That's where his strongest suit is, but that's just me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I have to say on the whole matter.
Yeah, anyway, I've had a nice, you know, rant and bitch. yeah, obviously, I'd like to thank Bead and B for coming on the podcast. And at such short notice, we were going to do this in a couple of days, but I actually felt okay to do it now, and we did. Yeah, so thank you very much. Yeah, I don't know where I'm going. Hopefully we'll be back soon. I'm hoping that our next podcast will have a special guest who we've had on before. He hasn't been on for a while, but he's got some exciting things coming up and we want to talk to him about it. So hopefully he'll be on next and that's what we'll be doing. I won't say who it is or make any promises because we're still working out everything. Yeah, but check the website. We should have some cool things coming on the next few weeks. June, it's definitely going to be a really good month. And you can find me at supermarcy.com. You can follow my Twitter at twitter.com/supermarcy. You can send me all your lovely letters to marcy@supermarcy.com. And you can find us on Facebook at, I always forget the address, it's facebook.com/sm.com/superpodcast. Bede, where can people find you on the internet?
Alrighty, you can find me Star Trekking across the universe. I mean, what? at twitter.com/BeJavine, or my Facebook page at facebook.com/BeJavine. Or my Movie Fan Central page at moviefancentral.com/TerraAustralis. And also you can find my weekly writings. I was going to say whitings for some bizarre reason. Writing. I have no idea what I'm saying. Weekly writings at supermarcy.com for my movie song of the week. And also you can check out my very first edition of a new column that I'm writing for the website called Bede's Bad Movie Tweetathon. Which I will. It's the most epic title of any column of all time. It's basically what I'm going to be doing. Every 2 to 3 weeks, I'll be watching a bad movie that the lovely listeners out there in Super Podcast Land can vote for, and whatever gets the highest votes, I will watch that bad movie for the column, and I will tweet it about it. I tweet it on Twitter. And then I'll put it all together in a lovely little article that you can read on supermarcy.com. And I also have a few other stuff coming out soon. I'm finally going to unveil my top 10 worst films of 2012.
Yeah, you know, you're just a little late.
I know, it's a, but I'm very late when it comes to these things, and also I've got two reviews coming up for The Hangover Part 3 and as well as The Great Gatsby. So keep a lookout for those two and all the other stuff.
Awesome. And B, where can people find you if they want to look you up online and you actually want them to?
Well, I don't want anyone to. but you can find me at B Harper on Facebook. As far as I know, there is only one B Harper, unless some other bitch has stole my name. I'm going to hunt that bitch down and cut her legs off.
I might change my last name to Harper and call myself Bead Harper.
You can also find me at supermarcy.com as a contributor, where I add my articles and my movie reviews. As for the projects I'm working on, there is one in particular that I'm working on with Marcy as we speak, and I'll be submitting some reviews at my own leisure or when Marcy orders me to with her whip and her leather mask. So yeah, that's my little plug. So keep an eye out, and that's it for me.
Cool. Anyway, sorry, I was like totally distracted by Facebook for a second. Yeah, that's a wrap. So yeah, thanks again, you guys. Thanks to our listeners, and yeah, hopefully it won't be so long between podcasts, health pending. Yeah, so visit the website and give us some love. And until next time, I've been super, Bede's been terrible, and B has followed my orders. Catch you later, Mr. everyone. Ow! All right, see you later.
Oh, we haven't heard that one in a while.
Bye, everyone.
Alrighty, see you everyone.
Bye-bye, darlings.
This podcast was brought to you by the Big Top Network.